Welcome to another edition of Ubuntu Radio. I'm out here with my boy DJ. This is another one of my golf buddies.
JD.
Maybe I just got started on the Bacardi a little too early. So this is my boy JD. We just came off playing 18 holes at a pretty nice golf course in Chapel Hill. And we'll just sit back relaxing. It's Sunday about 12:30. We've already done some work. It's Father's Day, so I thought it was a wonderful opportunity to talk to, again, JD, who's a father, another brother. It's the second episode of the Brown Liquor Chronicles. I'm with the brother. We're chronicling life. And what are we drinking, JD?
Today we have Bacardi Gold, some rum.
Okay.
So we're doing rum.
So this was in the shelf. Is this normal? This is like the go-to?
Absolutely not. This is something someone brought to my house during that party came to. So that's why we're drinking this today.
So we're drinking Bacardi Gold. This is 40% alcohol. And I cut mine with a little Pepsi. I think he's going straight up.
Yes, sir.
Like a man. He's manning it up. So that's what's going to be happening. And we're going to talk to JD about just about everything, man. We're going to talk to JD about everything. It's a big day. It's Father's Day. We're both fathers. We're both black men. We're both intelligent black men trying to make our way through this thing called American life. And sometimes it's good to talk about this shit. So, up, up, up. Clank, clank, clank. Here we go. To introduce yourself to the world, sir.
I am JD, better known as Jody Dunn, born in Dover, New Jersey. That's northern Jersey for people who don't know. About an hour from Philly, about an hour from New York City. So it's in the tri-state area.
So I say Brown Liquor Chronicles is me talking to brothers of a certain age with a certain disposition. So you're over 40, we'll say that. You're over 40.
Yes.
So automatically we understand that that's given you enough years to amass a lot of experiences in life and done some things, and that's what we're going to talk about. So we're going to start with Jersey. JD's been brought up in Jersey. Obviously, he's living here in North Carolina, where we're doing this interview now. He's also lived in the Midwest. I want to find out the differences and similarities between those different areas and a bunch of other stuff that I hope you stick around and hear, because this is a good man. We kid a lot. We kid. We bust each other balls. Out of all the people that we play golf with, and we play golf with about five people,
right,
rotation, I would say me and Dunny here, we
have a special relationship.
We bust each other's balls, so don't be. If you hear something going on in the next hour or so, just it's all love. So, first years in Dover, New Jersey. How many siblings? What's going on there?
I'm the youngest of three in my intermediate family.
Okay, so how big is the extended?
My father had two other kids from a previous marriage. Both of my parents had been married previously. Okay. My mother's first husband, they were in a bad accident and he was killed. She actually lived, but miraculously had to go through a lot of surgery. And that's actually how she met my dad. He had to help her learn how to walk and talk all over again. We had about every nationality there was.
No issues ever popped off. And again, how long were you there till you moved?
I was 11.
Okay, so 8, 9, 10 years old. You're old enough to understand not the politics of what's going on, but understand that there are different people, different cuisines, different philosophies, different ideas. Anything ever popped off?
Not exactly. Because when you're a little kid, you're oblivious. And when you get to grow up and you see every kind of person and you go to school with every kind of person and you don't see all the racism. I didn't see all the racism yet.
Okay.
Have no signs of racism. Nobody dropping N-bombs. None of that. Just this smorgasbord of middle class, everybody living together.
Gotcha.
This is what I see.
Gotcha.
And then in 1984, I moved to North Carolina.
And that's when shit went.
I moved to Apex, North Carolina in 1984.
So that's where we are now, technically, right?
We're in Apex? Number one small town in the state of North Carolina.
So when you moved down here, was it a more homogenous community? It was like your family and then everybody else was white? Or what?
I moved to a white neighborhood. There was two other black families adjacent to us, but still in the same subdivision.
So what was the adjustment like that? For you?
It was a very hard adjustment because I was a Jersey boy and I wasn't used to people. I wasn't used to listening or having to do things because of my color or not being able to do things because of my color. Now I had to learn how to live. You didn't have to know how to live in Jersey. You just did whatever and everybody does whatever. But now we come to a place where you don't see all those nationalities. There's only black people and there's only white people. There are no other races. All the black people in this town literally live on the other side of the tracks.
So that's something interesting. A couple of things that you mentioned there. And I grew up in New York City, so I saw the same thing when I moved down here. I moved down here a little bit later in life to go to school. So you were 11, 12, I was 17, 18, ready to go to college, had seen some stuff. But it's funny. When you're down here in North Carolina, even the white folks, I think, they identify as just white. When I'm in New York, New Jersey, there are the variations in terms of nationalities of white folks. They say, I'm Italian, I'm Greek, I'm Albanian, I'm whatever. Absolutely. Down here, it's as if it's just a safer, blander.
It's about skin color.
And there's more. And I'm trying to figure out, is it because there's more power in simply being a mass of white people rather than I'm Italian. So I'm just going to back up the Italians. The Italians are going to back me up. I'm Greek. I've been wondering that since I've been down. Is it just for them, there's got to be an advantage in just saying, not saying, nobody comes out and says I'm white, you're blacklist, just to identify as just, like you said, white. It's just
absolutely
two black families in the neighborhood and then everybody else is white.
Absolutely.
And they don't go further than that.
Absolutely. You're not German. You're not Czechoslovakian. You're just white.
And dreams of passion. And all the while I think of you.
You are judged according to skin color.
Wow.
And they only put you in two categories. You're either black or you're white. Well, three. Mm-hmm. Or other.
Did you in Jersey self-identify as black, or was it something like when I first came to this country, same sort of thing, I grew up in an island where everybody looked like me, and it was not until I came here at age 9 where I'm looking at myself going, I guess I'm black. I was just around the ash where I came from.
I had the same
damn
awakening moment.
So what, do you remember the moment? Do you remember the moment?
Yes,
usually it's somebody pointing it out to you.
No, for me, I guess kind of was my dad.
Hmm.
I asked my dad what we were.
What?
Yes.
How old?
I was probably
down here.
8 or 9, you know, and unbeknownst, well, he tried to sugarcoat it for me because I was so naive at the time. So he did it based on last name. So with the last name Dunn, you would probably be from Ireland. You would be Irish. So you're part Irish, I guess probably jokingly.
Okay.
Like he's so naive that he doesn't just realize he's black. Once I got to Apex, it was defined for me by others.
So then what is that come to Jesus moment?
Riding a school bus, I got picked on for being black. You know, they may not have called me the N-bomb,
mm-hmm.
but I was called all kinds of names. Everyone else was being called by their name or whatever nickname they chose to be called by.
Mm-hmm.
But you were making up names, call me. So I literally fought every white kid on that bus until I got
fought. How big is the damn bus?
The bus has 20 or 30 kids on it. I probably fought 15 white kids to the point where it was like, you gonna call me Jody. When I'm done with this bus, you gonna call me Jody.
How long did it take to get through all of them?
The first 6 months I went through that, so I had to actually talk my mom into taking me to school. So wow. After I told her what was happening and I kept getting in trouble for fighting these kids, it was, I'm just going to take you to school. Not by my choice of saying, I don't want to ride this bus. Because when I came here, I had a rat tail and a belt buckle that said fresh with spikes on it and fat laces with pumas, and no one even knew what the hell
break that was. Break dancing stuff.
Before I ever even heard the word thug, that's what I was called when I got here in 1984. You're a thug.
And that's just
no one,
dancing
not
stuff.
Even the black kids look like me. Every black kid picked on me because they didn't even know what a rat tail was.
So for those who don't know, what is a rat tail?
It is a piece of hair in the back of your head that you let grow. One spot. And you let it grow long so that it could just be a tail.
Prince Akeem had a rat tail till he was 21 years old. Prince Akeem. Before he came to America on his 21st birthday. Prince Akeem was a munda.
The black kid.
Cut off his rat tail. When he got to Queens in the barbershop, he cut off his rat tail.
So I was called Peter Cottontail. That's what the black kids call me. Peter Cottontail. But not until 2 years later was rat tail cool here, or they knew what it was. So now they want them. The same thing that they picked on me for. Now all the black kids want this very thing. This goes don't open to after dark. And it ain't till 12 till the party really starts. And I always had to be home by 10. Right before the fun was about to begin. Crowds of people lined up inside and out. Just one reason to rock the house. But in the day. I guess you would expect, looking back, the difference and the animosity and the misunderstanding and just that whole back and forth thing with the white kids on the bus. We mentioned the black kids. How long did they sort of keep up the fact that you were different than them? It took him about 6 months for the white kids to kind of just stop bugging you because you're going to kick their ass. How right. long did it take for the black kids to kind of go, all right, that's just done. It took a whole nother school year. It took from being
so that was
sixth
harder.
Grade to seventh grade. It was much harder because now you're dealing with your own kind. Mm-hmm. You're already dealing with the adversity of white people calling you names. Now you got to deal with the adversity of your own kind calling you names because you're different. They don't understand because they don't even know the style or anything. They're so far behind New York and New Jersey that they don't even know this style yet. So you're labeled as a freak almost because they don't even understand. It's not till 2 years later, but I had to actually fight the biggest kid in school. He used to sit behind me and he'd pull my rat tail and flick my ears. And I would reach my eye, look behind one day, and I was like, look, if you touch me again, I'm going to hurt you. And this is when you had to, when a desk was one piece, and he flicked my ear, and I took that whole desk, and I cracked his skull open.
You serious?
Serious.
Suspended
that. Suspended. Seventh grade, I cracked his skull open. Me and him still friends to the day, but I never heard another problem from another black kid after that. After cracking his skull open, then it was, I was cool. I wasn't a freak anymore. I was cool for cracking the biggest guy in the school's head open.
So here's the question. Does it take violence to become cool in the eyes of our kind when you're that young? Or is it just the fact that you were just standing up for yourself? It didn't matter how you did it. It just happened to be throwing the chair or the desk or the whole freaking contraption. But does it take for a young man of a certain age, specifically right around middle school, standing up physically to another brother to kind of gain some sort of respect?
Absolutely.
Serious.
In the black community.
So are we advocating it? This is what we be careful. Are we advocating it?
A little bit we do.
Damn.
A little bit we do. Because even you, as a father, if your son came home and told you, Dad, someone's picking on me, you would give him the best way to rectify this situation. And I gotta believe, just knowing you, that fighting would not be what
correct.
You would tell your
correct.
Son.
Correct.
But I gotta believe, on the other hand, that you would also tell him, don't be a punk, son. If it gets to that point, this is what you need to do. And at some point in time, your dad teaches you how to put them up and fight. Because sometimes you may have to fight. And that has been the struggle for black people. We didn't bring the struggle. The struggle came to us, right, and we had to fight. So sometimes you have to fight by any means necessary to get your point across. So I didn't want to fight this kid. I was scared to death of him. I was terrified. But I knew if he kept touching me, I was going to flip out on him. And I did. And that's any kid. Even in 2017, some kid is going to flip out if he doesn't have the right tools to get the response that he's looking for. He just wants to go to school and be known by his name. He doesn't want to have to be known as the black kid or the whatever. And he shouldn't be identified as that. He should be identified by his first and last name, or how people get identified. That's how you're identified, by your name and your social security number.
I hear you. So we're here talking with my buddy, J.D., Mr. Dunn. This is the second episode of the Brown Liquor Chronicles, and the brown liquor of choice is Bacardi Gold. So if you got that on hand, grab a glass and sip. So you've been on the Bacardi Gold train for how long? He said just somebody brought it over.
Yeah, I've been on this train for about 30 minutes now.
No, but like the first time, is it something that you, once you started drinking, enjoy yourself, is it something that you would buy or not really?
I do occasionally drink Bacardi rum, okay. Occasionally.
Okay.
You know, I can't say that it would be my choice in this day and age, because, you know, at different points in time in your life, maybe I could only afford Bacardi. Now is the time when I don't have to drink Bacardi, so.
So if we had the choice today and you had your brown liquor of choice in the crib, because we just grabbed whatever was downstairs. If you had your brown liquor of choice, what would it be?
I would go with some type of single malt scotch, because mm-hmm. as I was turned on to single malt scotch, I love it. It gotcha. Is very delicious. Very.
The bottle that Dee brought you, the Glenlivet.
Very smooth.
Okay.
Definite distinction between single malt and scotch.
Gotcha.
There
gotcha.
Are so many flavors and things going on, whereas single malt scotch is straight up what you taste is what you get, and that's it. It's one taste, and it's very delicious, smooth.
So we finished talking about the middle school years, literally fighting for your identity, your sense of self. You go through that. I'm assuming 7th, 8th grade, they don't mess with you.
Well, that was 7th grade, so now 8th grade, it's
a Were you known as the kid that threw the damn chair at somebody
yeah,
and he fucked with you?
Like, he ain't playing. I done beat all the white kids' ass.
Okay.
Now I done beat the big black kids' ass. So it's like, Jody is crazy.
Gotcha.
So, you know, once you do something crazy like that, then you don't have to fight anymore. So I didn't have to fight, but I became friends with these very white kids. They were in my neighborhood. The next closest black kid to play with would have been riding a bike for 3 miles, which I did at times.
And this is middle school?
This is in middle school. Now in 8th grade, mm-hmm. I'm accepted by the black people.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm the only black guy that lives on the white side of town.
Gotcha.
Everyone else lives in this town on the other side of the tracks.
Literally the tracks.
Literally the other side of the tracks. The only good thing is my father's uncle built the black side of town. So I had been over there and met some of these kids in this neighborhood before, and these neighborhoods.
What did the people in your side of the town, I mean, you're the only one over there, so at some point you have to be kind of accepted. And when you're accepted, people forget that you're still one of those guys. So what did you hear when they're talking to you and they kind of forget that, oh my God, Jody's black?
I was accepted because I was a bright individual.
Okay.
So I was in the classes with all the smart kids. I got good grades. But I was also the person that could get along with anyone. So I got along with all those kids that I fought, All the redneck kids, they're my friends. The druggy kids, they're my friends. The black people, they're my friends. The special ed kids, they're my friends. Mm-hmm. Because I could deal with them. So they put me in those classes to deal with those people that may have been slow. But I made relationships there that actually benefited me down the road. Whereas no one, white or black, wanted to deal with those kinds of kids.
So that's middle school. High school, a breeze, easy, because you'd establish yourself, establish a comfort level. I'm the guy that can move in between any spaces in the high school, so I'm good.
I'm the cool guy.
Well, I don't know about all that now.
I'm the cool guy.
That's something I might question. You might be a little drunk to be saying that
you
shit.
You may question it, but
I might question that shit. I need the proof. Cool guy. I want to see the damn yearbook, and I want to see under your picture, the cool guy. I don't think I'm going to see something that says the cool guy.
I am the cool guy, man.
I guess I'm going to have to take your word for it. I can't go back.
That can get anybody on any side or any color to do just about anything.
Okay, jealousy, envy me, send me out of sympathy. Finger to my enemies, ain't nobody better than me. I want it all, the world is mine, I get it all, man. I'm so bad, not even Jesus can rescue me. Well, that's just pussy, but I hear it in the lyrics. The pride, self-esteem, image, getting...
The first time we met again, we met on the golf course, just randomly. You were playing with somebody, you and Joe were playing together at RGA. Me and Lai, you were playing together. We're like, let's just play together. Four brothers on a Sunday morning at a golf course, that's like a rare thing.
Here's the whole thing, though. Me and Joe weren't playing together. We had gotten
random?
Paired.
So, okay, so,
and
I didn't
we
know
got
that.
Paired with you guys.
Oh, and, so y'all had never met each other till that
no,
day.
No, so this had all developed into this relationship that it
Damn.
Is today. So
that
day,
I didn't
we
know.
All four met each other.
And then D, same sort of thing. The four of us are playing, or three of us are playing.
Three of us are playing.
Are playing in... Nightdale.
And they pair him with us.
And he just joined us like on this off the second box.
Right.
All right. So the first day we met, we started talking. And then I think Joe graduated from Maryland, University of Maryland. Me and Lai graduated from NC State. And I listened to this. I remember this. Is I don't think anybody said anything about degrees and this is my degree. Nobody does that. But... I think you were very quick to point out sort of your level of success was not based on the degree. And I almost think you were ready for people with degrees to kind of start talking down to you, but we didn't. We don't do that. I say that to get to the, and we're going to get to this in sort of the next segment. I think you're very proud of the fact and a lot of things that people might have thought could have happened for this bright, intelligent fighter throwing chairs at people. But who can mix and match in any kind of social situation in high school.
Absolutely.
So people had this, Jody's going to go and be, you know, the first Barack or whatever it is.
Sure.
But that didn't happen. So I want to talk
Absolutely.
About that.
Right.
And the fact that you're very proud of taking the road less traveled, but still, I mean, we're in a two-story house in Apex that's got a man cave. You're living well. You're living well. But you didn't have to go down that college debt path to get to where you are. And so that's what I want to talk about these days. Am I right in saying that, one, you're very proud of the fact that you took an alternate route to your success, and, I mean, you own that history, and you're very proud of it.
I'm not proud of it in the sense that I didn't do what was forecasted for me.
So do you wish that you'd gone to college?
At this point in my life, no.
Okay.
I don't wish that I had.
Okay.
I'm proud of myself because I had to overcome a lot to get here. You met me at a time when it was good. Had you met me 15 years ago, at that point in my life, you'd have been like, Jody, what are you doing? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, no, I just had to work hard, man. But I always had determination. The guy with the degree, the guy who's the lawyer, the guy who's the doctor, the guy who's whatever, he has to have determination to get through whatever it is that he has to face to get to his goal, okay? After I got to be a senior in high school, my goal was not to be a lawyer. I wanted to party and have fun. And I didn't want somebody telling me how I should live my life. Like nowadays, it's okay for a kid to take a year off before they go to school and learn some things.
Mm.
And I always thought, man, I know what it takes to be successful. I will take a different approach. But my reasoning for doing it is something that nobody knows. We're about to find out on this interview.
So hold up, hold up. Let me keep the people at bay here. We're with Mr. Jody Dunn, for God's sakes. I'm with Jody Dunn. This is the second episode of Ubuntu Radio's Brown Liquor Chronicles, where the liquor of choice is Bacardi today. It's Father's Day. We're celebrating life with a good man, a good life. And so we're trying to now talk about how you can get there. And the path doesn't have to be the cookie cutter path that's laid out for everybody, because that path is full of debt. It's full of a lot of shit that in this day and age people don't need. So we talk about the fact that Jody now was a successful high schooler, graduated high school, but you recognize, all right, this college to professional life thing, that's not what I want to do. Why? Why was it not what you wanted to do? Besides party.
Let me correct you. I didn't graduate high school.
What the? This I didn't know. So this is why we're talking about
it. It's not something you want to go around telling people.
So what happened? What happened?
What happened was there was a big party, and I missed one exam, and I wasn't willing to go back to school for that one credit.
Are you freaking kidding me? If you play with fire, then you're gonna get burned. You were the little bitty baby. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was the first thing you learned. You say, are you freaking kidding me?
But I always thought, I am one of the brightest individuals. Every test I ever took, every class they ever placed me in said that I was one of the brightest kids ever. Ever. So I always thought it doesn't matter if I take the route that everybody wants me to take. I'm gonna end up in a good spot. That's what I always thought. I say the hard head. Whether it takes me 10 years or it takes me 20 years, I'm going to end up in a good spot. So when you take that route, you have to take the good with the bad. You know, when you have a degree, then you always get to, you get to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't have a degree, it means that you may not be able to maintain. I hope that your focus can stay high.
Mm-hmm.
Your focus has to be real high in order for you to achieve where you want to be. If you don't have the degree. The degree makes it so you don't have to ever go backwards. There are times when I had to go backwards. I had to take less. I got to the plateau and then it was like, all right, this is over. Now I have to go back down here. So even being able to cope with those things in life would be hard. If you were at 60 grand and you had to go back to 30 grand, that would be hard for you to swallow. And if you had a degree, it'd be twice as hard for you to swallow. Like, I did all this work. I spent all this money. Why am I going backwards? Well, I don't have those issues to worry about.
Well, first of all,
spend any money.
I've been there. I'm doing that now. So the degree is mean shit. I'm doing that now.
Right. And I'm at a point now at 44 years old where I feel like I have a job that requires a degree. But I have the hands-on knowledge that no one that went to school, you could have went to school for 10 years. You can't learn what I know.
See, those things are rare. And that sort of life is rare. Now, like the person that, you know, when I first came to this country, I would recognize this recurring theme in kind of stories that were being told on television. It was the guy that came in the mailroom. He worked his way up every day, got better and better, knew the right people, and eventually ended up running the company. Right. I don't think those things happen anymore because you have to even come in the mailroom with a freaking degree.
Well, in the 1950s, if you were a white guy and you had been working in a coal mine, you could walk into a bank and say, I want to be a banker today, and they may give you a chance.
Right.
Okay, in 2017, everyone has that same opportunity. Right. You just have to be an exceptional ass person to get it done. That is me.
So
I will walk into your office and tell you that I am more than capable of doing this job, and I can display it in a way and make it sound so good that you would just be dying at the chance.
So then how does an 18-year-old without a high school diploma, get started doing that? What do you walk into?
He has to pick something. He has so what to did you pick a road to go down.
What did you pick?
Well, at 18 years old, I hadn't picked anything. I figured I needed to be maybe 24, 25. So I looked at it like this. Okay, if I had been a lawyer, I'd be graduating college at 21 years old, 22 years old. Then I'd need to go to grad school. I'd need to go to law school after that. So I'd be in the area of 27 or 28 years old. So I thought I had better figure out what I want to do by the time I'm 27 or 28 years old. I've got some time to just fuck off until then. And that's how I looked at it. I got some time to figure it out.
Were you staying at home the whole time?
No, never. I was on my own.
That's the other thing. So what did mom and dad say? You said, Mom, fuck it. I ain't going back to high school because of this one test. Your mom is not saying, what the hell is wrong with you?
That's the story, okay? This all happened because I wanted to prove my mother wrong. That's somebody that me and her never saw eye to eye, okay? This is a person that till this day, and I know this for a fact because we just argued about it last week, she is still mad because I had a free ride. I couldn't just go to law school, bro. They were going to give me a free ride. No paying for it, no parents paying for it. Wasn't going to cost me a dime. That's how bright I was. I could have went for free. And my whole thing was, I'll prove this woman wrong. But our relationship was so bad that it was like I would have done anything not to do anything that would have made her happy. I'll never go to school after the fact. I won't even fucking graduate from high school, but I'll show you that I can be just as successful as the next man. So this has all been a lifelong test, and this is the first time I get to tell it.
So, you leave the house. I'm gonna fucking prove to you, Mom, that I can get this done. But in your mind, you're thinking, well, I got about 10 years until I'm 27, 28. To kind of get to where the professional person would be just kind of starting their professional life. So then, you have some time to mess around, but you have to do something. What are you doing at 19, 20 without a high school degree? A high school diploma.
I'm partying my ass off.
Living where?
I'm living downtown Cary.
With who? We got to pay bills.
I'm living by myself because some jackass guy put an ad in the paper for an apartment that was $1,500 for $350. And I told him that was illegal. And that he couldn't do that, and that he needed to give it to me for $350.
What the hell?
So he agreed that it was wrong. So he made a deal. So it was $480. So I got a nice-ass townhouse, like 1,700 square feet, 1992 downtown Cary.
On your own, but you got to pay for it.
I work at Cary Town Center.
Okay, you're doing what?
I am a maintenance guy at Cary Town Center.
So maintenance guy, meaning what specifically?
Meaning I'm just fixing random shit in the mall.
Okay. And it's enough money to pay the $450 plus
for me to
party
live on
and
my
do
own.
What you got to do.
Party and living on my own. I'm not comfortable. I'm paycheck to paycheck.
Budget? Because you said party. You wanted to party and have a good time.
I budget my money. Okay. I know that I need to pay my rent and I need to pay my bills to be here. Okay. So I do that. I got a second job. I work at the mall being a maintenance guy, but I also work at Jarman Shoes inside of the mall.
So what kind of hours? You're a maintenance man from when to when?
I'm a maintenance man from 7 to 3:30. And from 5 to 9, I sell shoes to businessmen. And these businessmen, every time I meet people of a high caliber, they're just like, what are you doing? Like, you seem like some guy that I would want working for me. What are you doing here selling shoes? What are you doing here doing maintenance during the day?
So then this goes on for how long? From 18 till?
Well, in 1994, I get someone pregnant. I have a child.
Dun, 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 dun! So this tone is going to change.
I'm 21
years
old.
Just a little bit. So now we're talking life. And one of the reasons I want to talk to Jody is that I think I'm looking back on the people that I've interviewed. I mean, not just on the Brown Liquor Chronicles, but other people I've interviewed. sometimes I don't know if I've interviewed some bras. You know what I'm saying? Just some bras who got some shit and kind of other shit that bras gonna just relate to.
Right.
So a man's got a girl knocked up at 21.
A white girl.
No. What the? Da?
Dun, dun, dun.
Twenty-one, no high school diploma, working maintenance, and as a shoe salesman.
And a white girl president.
And got a North. That is a white. It's a different thing to be white in New Jersey to New York. You got a white one, not a white girl in North Carolina. Well, how do y'all meet? At the mall? You sold some shoes?
She goes to Cary High. She's on the.
She's young.
She's on the state championship basketball team. Girl can shoot the lights out, bro. Shoot the lights out, you hear me? And she's the finest thing anyone's ever seen. I don't care if you was black, brown, yellow, Puerto Rican, or Haitian. You want this girl. And I am still the cool guy. That is how we bonded. We have all the same friends in common, and we never knew each other. And I mean, when I say all the same
friends... She went to the same high school as you or not? No,
she went to Cary High. I went to Apex High.
Okay.
But she's 4 years younger than me, so. I actually, the first time I actually saw her, I don't even know her. I go to a Cary High game, watching a girls game at Cary High. And this white girl with the big boobs is shooting the lights out. Just draining them, killing them. And I have a big party, a 4-keg party in Cary. Biggest party ever been in Cary. Police are there, everybody's there. The big party. I meet her at this party. I tell her, you can come in, but all these niggas you with can't come in. And she says, nah, I ain't gonna come. Maybe a month later, I meet her at the club. Da 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 da.
Ba ba ba.
9 months later, we have a baby.
So mom, her mom is saying what?
Her mom is not saying much because they're from the Midwest where this is normal.
What do you mean this is normal?
Black and white. It's normal.
Now, most people would not agree there.
I'm going to have to agree. It's normal. Not that people like it, but it's normal. It happens so often.
Young people.
It happens so often, it's normal. I would say 50% of people in the Midwest date outside their race. 50.
So, we did mention this, the fact that you grew up in New Jersey. You were young. Multiracial, multicultural neighborhood from all over the world. You come to North Carolina, and then it's black versus white. And now we're sort of hinting at the fact that there's another part of you understanding of Midwestern culture because you actually spent some time there eventually with this young lady. Now, I would think there was some hesitancy on the part of white folk in the Midwest to kind of accept this. But now that I think back on it historically.
And there is.
Historically, as we're moving west, the West is like the frontier. So the West keeps getting more and more West. So at one point, Ohio is the far West. Then Iowa. And just like any place else that's sort of away from Central, more shit can happen because nobody's really kind of checking and looking. So we have black homesteaders. There's a history of black people farming land and kind of just creating their own identity and community out there. And so if you're creating that community and you're away from... Because those Western states were so-called Northern states. They were freedmen states. So I can see historically where, you know, that kind of happened. That's allowed, but when you first say it, my first reaction is, nah, man, this is racist, it's just anybody else and anywhere else.
More so.
I can see what you're saying.
Yes.
But my thought it's going to be among the working class of poor people. I'm going, once you get to a certain status economically, that doesn't happen.
All classes are included. All classes.
My just first impression is that we're working class people, we're the same. You and I can hook up, blue, blue, blue. Once we get to a certain economic level, I think, in my mind, the whiteness comes in and the perception of I'm better, so I have to then date somebody who's better.
Not exactly, because all thinking doesn't change. The thinking of black men are bigger never changes. I don't care what.
When you say bigger,
class,
when you say bigger,
you all, what are you, you know what
about?
I'm talking about.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Joe.
In a genital region, it's
in the
just,
genitalia.
Yes. So that does not.
So this is happening because
class
of stereotypes?
Has nothing to do with that.
This is happening because of stereotypes.
Well, the white girl that has her shit together and has an MBA still might say, I need one of the big man dingoes.
Oh, so we're not even, I'm not even going to keep going down that road.
With your party the other night, all the ladies were treating me right. Moving my feet to the disco beat. How in the world could I keep my seat?
We're going to go back to you at 20 years old, knocking her up. Mom is okay with it because it's normal. Your mom...
I'm a good
point,
guy. I
your
have
mom.
My shit together. I have my own place. I got all my own shit. You know, mom's not totally...
You're going to take care of the baby.
But her stepdad is not cool with it. So let me tell you what happened.
Okay.
So we have the child, right? They pretty much leave her alone.
Disown her or leave her alone?
Well, just kind of leave her alone. They're not doing anything for her. Okay. My family has to do all the doing for us. Okay? So they invite us to dinner one day. And her dad thinks it's going to be a joke because he's like, we're cooking a duck. And Jody, I want you to carve the duck. And he had no idea because in Indiana, where he's from, ain't nan nigga know how to carve no duck. Let's just keep it real. Sorry, Ubuntu, sorry. But no brother knows how to carve a duck. He ain't even thinking about carving a duck. I go to this house, guy's house and carve the shit out of this duck to the point where he is pissed. You hear me? Oh, he is livid at his own table because I've pulled off carving this duck and not tearing it up. He's mad. But soon after, me and him become the best of friends. We have everything in common. I like racing. I like lots of shit that white guys like. I like racing.
What's your racing like? NASCAR?
I love NASCAR.
Okay.
But it pertains to some things that I know. When I ran Tempur-Pedic, my first good job, first big job.
This is after the kid?
After the kid.
Okay.
This is like 99. When I have my daughter, I get this fabulous job. And I'm running Tempur-Pedic for the Southeast, handling every bit of
regional manager.
Regional operations manager. I handle every bit of all logistics for this particular product. You cannot get one in the Southeast without getting it from me.
How did that happen?
So I see this job and I'm like, I want this job. So I fill out for the job and I gotta ride on a truck and be a helper. And these people say, we don't know how we ended up with you, man, but you are gonna run this place. It's a brother. And this is a brother that's
older. He just saw your ability from a lower level and said, all right, you deserve something better? Or you applied for that manager job?
It would be no different than you having a player on your team that stands out. He's brighter than everybody. He's faster than everybody. He shoots better than everybody. He defends better than everybody. We all have that one young kid or someone that comes along where we're just like, man, I would love to see where this kid ends up in 10 years. And this is the thing that this guy would tell me all the time, man. Like, man, when you get 40, man, I want to see where you're at. So I end up as this delivery guy, but they give me all of it.
So from the delivery man, he says, this is manager position, you're a good fit because you've developed a relationship with them, you've shown them your worth outside of the delivery scope. You've had conversations with them, you've seen your intelligence, and he puts you in that role?
they put me in that role.
So management, he recommended it.
He recommends that I be put in this role.
So there's something to be said. If you're going to go, and again, we're not advocating one way or the other. Like, we're not advocating for you to drink Bacardi rum right now. If you're going to do it, God help you and enjoy this conversation. We're not advocating violence. You don't have to throw a chair at some guy to gain respect in middle school.
No.
But there's a couple of things. Apply yourself. So a couple of things we talked about. Determination. You have to have an understanding of who you are, what you can do, what you did. Even without a high school diploma, you understood your capabilities. You accepted what you could do. You accepted the responsibility of the life you're going to live.
Yes.
Even if it was in deference to your mother. You're living it to kind of spite your mother, but still, you're cool with that, and you're moving forward in that vein. The other thing is, I keep hearing, is you had mentors, people who believed in you. And I think
Absolutely. That's
one of the things that a lot of bras lack.
Absolutely.
In your similar situation. So they don't have the diploma. People turn their backs on them. They can't get the job. But here you are. You had mentors, sheriff, judge. Somebody was even willing to get you to go to law school. And at Tempur-Pedic, this older, seasoned, veteran, probably college-educated black man says, all you need is a chance. And he gives you that chance.
Right. But you don't give the chance to just anybody. You have to give the chance to people who deserve a chance. So if someone doesn't display all the right characteristics to give them a chance, you wouldn't give them a chance. If some kid comes out there and he's just lousy, you're just like, dude, I can't make you the goalie. You're lousy. I would love to. I know you want to be, but you're lousy. Okay? I was good. I displayed all the right things to have that job. And I knew that the job was available. Let's make that be known too. I knew that it was available, so I needed to make sure that, I think what happens to a lot of young black guys is white people discourage them, and they think, they go into things thinking, I can't never get ahead because the white man ain't gonna let me. You better be better than every guy that you know. It's no different than someone sitting in a library falling asleep for 3 days until they learn the information that they need to learn to pass a test to become a dentist. I worked all night for free to learn things so that the same things that helped me today. So all I did was just apply myself in every area that I could. I wanted to be the best at whatever I did around there. That's it. Every time I ventured in something, whether I was the grounds guy or the maintenance guy, my mind told me I want to be the best at what I do, and I will shine and someone will see it. So people will see these things. Mm-hmm. So that's what we got to get these young people to understand, that it's not about what someone told you. It's about moving forward every second of every day. Applying yourself. When you're at that point when someone says, you can't do that, let that be your motivation to be more than that. But I also had good parents that let me know that if you're going to succeed as a black man on any level, professional or not, you need to be better than everybody else. And time has told us that.
We got to back up and talk about, so you knock the white girl up with the big breasts and the jump shot. Her stepdad is not too happy. Mom's cool with it. Your family's okay with it at this point?
I have a family that is from Raleigh, you know, civil rights movement people. But they are Christian people. So they don't like it, but they're never going to tell me it's not okay.
Okay. So everybody's on board. Your first child is a boy or girl?
A boy.
Y'all stay here in Raleigh?
Because here in Raleigh.
How did you end up in Indiana?
Her mom, about a year or two later, her parents moved. They go to Indiana. So her dad's sick. And he tells me, Jody, if I ever get sick and die, I need y'all to move to Indiana and be with her mom. So now it's 2007. I have saved my money. I have 401k. I've got it all, bro. I done started a business. I'm making $180,000 a year.
What sort of business?
So I decided, like, maybe 1995, that I would take jobs that could get me to being a builder. I knew I wanted to build houses. Didn't mean that I could do every job that was going to, you know, stay in line with that, because obviously I did the Tempur-Pedic thing. Mm-hmm. But I want to be a builder. I know that in 1995. I want to build houses.
And how old are you at that point?
In 1995, I am 23 years old.
Okay.
I know that I want to be a builder. Okay, but by the time I get to this 27 or 28 threshold, because I know in my mind, this is when I'd be ready to be a lawyer. So it's every day, every minute, I can't get it out of my mind. Like, I have to do something with my life. I have to do something fantastic, because this is what's going to prove my point. That doing it my way and taking the road less traveled was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to get this. I get the Tempur-Pedic job. Now it's 1999. I'm making 60 grand. In 1999, it was 60 grand was pretty good money. Doing kitchens and baths, doing remodels. Actually, I was just putting, I'd do new home construction.
You or you hired subcontractors?
Me. I did it myself.
Builder.
A builder.
From the scratch.
From scratch.
And brick and mortar, the whole damn thing.
I even invented some things that, you know, I did a bar for this engineer. He thought it was so cool, he tried to sell it.
So how long does that go on?
For a couple years. So when the stock market crashes,
this is like 07, 08.
This is like 07. Mm-hmm. Stock market crashes. We all know that that was a bad time for
Kills
everyone.
Kills the building industry.
Killed the first thing to go, the building industry, because that's what caused it.
Right.
So it's the first thing to go. Like, literally, one day you're making $180,000 on Wednesday, and on Thursday there's nothing. Nothing. There's nothing else going on.
So what happened to the savings and all the stuff?
I was one of the people that my 401k got ate up.
In the stock market?
In the stock market. Me and my wife. We lose like $38,000 that we finally have saved up. So that's what happened. And I lose all this money, the little savings that we had, you know, 30 grand that we had in 401k, all that gets wiped out. You know, now I'm not working. So that puts strain on your family.
So, okay, you said now ex-wife. So, obviously, that financial burden put a strain on the relationship?
Oh, finances always put a strain on any relationship.
How long until y'all divorce? Like, after the crash? After the stock market debacle?
Well, this
2007,
is 2007. So, things aren't, you know, things aren't looking good.
And you're
good.
Living in Indiana at this point?
No, I'm still here in North Carolina.
Okay.
So, I finally, we've always had to run to my family. I mean, I probably owe my dad 50 grand to this day.
Damn.
Paid things. And
damn.
Just giving me lots of money to stay afloat, and her family has never helped. So, I tell her, this time, your family's got to help. If it means I got to move to Indiana, that's what I'll do. So, like, for me, I'm that guy that, when I stuck my foot in my mouth at a young age, I had to get it out of there. Mm-hmm. So if it meant saying, oh, we got to go, when she called and said, all right, they said we can go, then I had to go.
So pack up, move to Indiana, you heard?
I said I didn't want to go.
What happened?
Yeah. She calls them, and they're like, she's like, I'm going. And I'm taking my kids, and I'm like, I'm staying here.
Kids?
Kids.
At that point, you had
now.
Two kids. So, first was a son, you were
21.
21. When was a daughter born? What age were you?
1999.
How old were you then?
26.
So, is she working too? Or she's staying at home mom and you're sort of the breadwinner?
No, she's working.
She's working. So, you're both dual income family. Stock market crash comes. You're done. Do you shift careers and then start doing something here in Raleigh? Something else? When the building industry went down?
When the building industry went down, I found a job. And you know, I can talk. talk all day long. Now that someone wants to give me a sales job. So now I'm selling jobs. After that happens, she's already gotten her mom to say, okay, come to Indiana. And I'm like, well, I'm going to stay here in this house. I can't afford it. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I don't want to go to Indiana. I don't know anything about Indiana. I don't know anybody in Indiana. It's 900 miles away from my family. Mm-hmm. And I tell her I'm not going. So she's on her way. She's got my kids in the car. My kids say, go by my dad's house. And they knock on my door. And they're like, we ain't going without you. What would you do if your kids knocked on your door and said, my mom's taking us 900 miles away and we don't want to go without you? What would you do?
I think I'd be going.
At that point, it doesn't matter how successful you are, what you got, what you don't got. This is at night. They're at the door, dude. I open the door up. They tell me this. Their mom rolls down the window and is like, you got 5 minutes. I go to my house and grab whatever I can grab in my hands. I don't even have time to put it in a bag or anything. Scrap 5 days worth of clothes. I get in her car and I go to Indiana. Had to pray so hard on my way. On my way. Glory, hallelujah. I'm on my way. I just walked out of a $350,000 house on the lake. The car's there. I left the lights on. Left everything. Because my kids said, Dad, we ain't going without you. But I'm a good guy and I don't want her life to change. Because I feel like you can drop me anywhere and I'll make it happen. Doesn't matter where you put me. Doesn't matter the circumstances. I'll make something out of nothing. That's what I believe. Because I've been doing it. I can make a way out of no way. And I go. And it's the biggest eye-opening thing I've ever seen. We go to a town called Noblesville, which is just north of Indianapolis.
So you're driving there through the cover of darkness at night. Now, the kids are going to be talking to Dad, Dad, glad you're here, glad you're here, glad you're here. Oh my God, on the way there, I'm talking about. So I'm just imagining. You're excited talking to your kids. Man, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. They're excited for you. They go to bed, and the reality of what the fuck you just did hits you, and you've got another 9 hours to drive before those kids wake up. What are you thinking?